Lewis is a brilliant inventor who meets a mysterious stranger named Wilbur Robinson, whisking Lewis away in a time machine, and together they team up to track down Bowler Hat Guy in a showdown that ends with an unexpected twist of fate.
Hi, I'm Andre.
I'm Michelle.
I'm Emily.
And I'm Luis.
And we are The Walt Vault, a family-friendly podcast where we get silly and talk about Disney movies. Welcome to The Walt Vault, episode 23. What are we talking about?
Nobody likes you when you're 23.
Truth.
Is that a song?
Yes, it's a song.
Oh, I thought it was a truism. Just wisdom.
Never mind. Anyways.
This week we are talking about the 2007 3D animated Disney film, Meet the Robinsons.
Yay!
Meet them.
We met them. We were introduced.
We met the Robinsons. Mm-hmm. That's a song.
Is it?
Yeah.
That you just made up?
Yep.
Okay. Yes.
This movie was a lot of fun. I liked it. First impressions, go.
First impressions of this movie. For the time that it came out during Disney animation, it was the best of a really bad era for Disney animation.
That's your first impression of this movie.
The movie that came out before this was Chicken Little, and the movie that came out after this was Bolt. It wasn't a beautiful time for Disney animation.
But what did you think about this movie? What was your first impression of this
movie? The movie.
Yeah.
It's a good movie.
Oh, okay.
I like it. It's funny. It's a little bit underrated. Like, I like it. It has some sentimental value for me. Yes.
Some. Not
it's good.
Just some.
Your turn.
A little bit of sentimental value. I like this movie a lot. It's a time travel story, which is very appealing to my science fiction
brain.
Oh, there we go.
Not the same song. Michelle has no idea what I'm singing.
Nope.
No.
Wah, 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 wah. Go ahead.
Doctor Who. Oh, I don't watch Doctor Who.
Yeah, because you got problems.
Right. Because you don't appreciate time travel. I do. So this movie was jolly good. Emily, your first impressions?
I enjoy time travel.
Anyways.
Good.
Actually, first impression of this movie is confusion because there's a lot of stuff going on.
Oh, yeah, there is.
I've seen it. This is probably the second time that I've seen it. And I very oddly remembered a lot because I'm one of those movie watchers where the first time I watch something, I really have a hard time remembering everything. And if there's any extended period of time in between, I'm like, I don't remember what happened. But I did remember a lot. So I was actually really excited to like rewatch knowing what you know
right.
with the twist of fate at the end. I really enjoyed this movie. I really like it a lot. Plus,
time travel. Luis.
Timey-wimey BS.
Last week, you were
wibbly-wobbly,
you were very against
stuff.
Watching Meet the Robinsons. Did watching it change that at all?
Ever so slightly.
Only ever so slightly.
Someone was over here crying, so I'm
ever
pretty sure.
He
so
said
slightly.
That he refused to watch the movie.
No, but he cried with the
ever. I never cry. It was just
never cry.
A right. biological response to feeling uncomfortable.
Okay. Oh.
That is the hottest
well
mess
then.
First impression.
Well then.
I never cry. Just biological responses to
Anyways.
Feeling uncomfortable.
So I would
that include tears and sobbing.
Stipuli.
Weird. So this is the 47th animated film. Like I said, before this was Chicken Little, which was also a choice. I kind of wanted to watch Chicken Little instead of Meet the Robinsons.
And Luis promptly
I was
said,
like, no.
He promptly said, I will watch Meet the Robinsons 10 times over Chicken Little. Mm.
So there was this weird early 2000s period where Disney animated movies were not so great.
Like or at Pixar least not perceived that great.
Right.
And weren't exactly popular. Like Meet the Robinsons, not that popular. Chicken Little was before this, not that popular. Bolt was after. Not that popular. They were just kind of like Disney animated movies that were good, but didn't really hit the mark with fans and things like that.
They weren't instant classics.
No, they weren't.
And or just weren't marketed well because I don't particularly remember any of those. the only, like I said, I've only seen this Meet the Robinsons one other time, and it was on Netflix within the last 2 years.
Like, right. Disney animation, like, in the 90s was good, and then we went into this 2000s where, like, Pixar was, like, really upping their game. And these Pixar movies were amazing that these other Disney animated movies that John Lasseter was still executively producing weren't so great, which I do have a fun fact that this movie got made and it was supposed to have a sequel. It was this movie was supposed to have the sequel and Aristocats was supposed to have a sequel. And John Lasseter shut them both down and then started doing a lot of the sequels for like Pixar stuff.
So what happened is during the time that this movie was being made, Disney acquired Pixar officially, and John Lasseter became the head of both Pixar and Walt Disney Animation Studios. This this is the first movie to have that new Steamboat Willie opening with Walt Disney Animated Studios. Yeah, that that sounded so good.
Thank you.
Yeah. So
so when John Lasseter, this was like one of the first ones that he came on for Disney Animated. So it was almost done, and when he came on, he changed 60% of the movie.
Yeah, changed a bunch of it. The villain wasn't scary enough, and Doris wasn't there, and
he didn't like the ending.
There was no Doris?
There was no Doris in the original cut of this movie.
So I would like to think that parts that I like about this movie are credited to John Lasseter, like he came in and did a little bit of his, like...
He made it more edgy.
...magic stuff, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then that's probably why I like it a lot more than some of those other animated ones. And really until, like, Princess and the Frog and Tangled came out, it was, like, I wasn't really into watching Disney animated movies. I was like, Pixar, 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 because it was, like, a great time for Pixar.
Ratatouille came out the same year as this movie.
Well, but I think that they tried to push Pixar to ensure that the acquisition was solidified. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Disney
was, I mean, Pixar was good on its own. Mm-hmm. Disney was good on its own. But when you put two things together, it doesn't always mean it's going to be great.
Right. So this is a transition period.
Yes.
And it definitely was, if you look at acquisitional trends. Yeah. There you
go. Mm-hmm. And I will say that for this transition period, Meet the Robinsons is my favorite out of, like, those animated that came out during that time. For reasons being, there's a lot of funny stuff that happens in this movie.
A lot of fun
We've been
stuff.
Talking about eccentricism a lot lately, which this movie is definitely eccentric, has a very eccentric and quirky family, which I can totally try to describe to you right now.
We're going to go straight into
family. Going to go straight into
should
the
we? It's called Meet the Robinsons. I think we should talk about
this. Okay, go ahead and meet them.
We should meet them.
Let's meet them.
Let's meet them.
The Robinsons. We have the main character, the little boy, Lewis, who is a great inventor.
Lewis, the orphan, who was
the orphan,
dropped off in front of an orphanage and lived a long and miserable life.
With Angela Bassett.
Mm-hmm.
Angela Bassett.
Yes.
When his roommate, Goob.
Goob. Move along.
We'll get back to Goob.
Okay, he's not in the Robinsons.
When Lewis is at the science fair, there is a boy that comes up to him and is like, I'm a time police. Like
Jimmy Neutron.
Wilbur.
Jimmy Neutron.
No, I didn't even know he had a name. It was Jimmy Neutron.
Spoiler alert.
No, just move along.
Okay, his name is Wilbur. Okay. So, we're doing the family tree. Wilbur. At the top of the family tree.
Has a dad.
We have Lucille and Bud, and they are married. Lucille and Bud. The Grampies. Old man who likes to wear his clothes backwards. Mm-hmm. And the grandma who's baking cookies, she's dancing.
Lucille's baking cookies. Bake those cookies, Lucille.
Bake those cookies, she's Lucille.
Yes. So there's Bud. Bud wears his clothes backwards. His brother is named Fritz, who is a very, very weird dude whose wife is a puppet named Petunia.
Oh, I didn't know that was his brother.
I didn't know that was his brother.
That's
either.
His brother, which Bud's makes brother. Sense because they're weird. So that's his brother.
Like a very much younger brother? Like he wasn't that old, was he?
Yeah, he definitely wasn't as old as Bud.
Not as old. His other brother is Joe. The fat one the who fatty. Just sits
Uncle
in the chair.
Joe. That, I
so those
that.
Are the. So there's the three brothers at the top.
Maybe
Bud,
they're not adopted stepbrothers?
They're brothers. They're siblings. So Bud.
Late in life babies.
Yes. Yeah. Bud, Fritz, and Joe are siblings. Bud is married to Lucille. Fritz is married to a puppet named Petunia. And Joe is married to a girl named Billy. So there's a picture of her.
Is Billy in the movie?
Yeah, she is.
Oh, okay.
This family's very big.
Is she the teal one?
Yeah.
Yeah, she has an accent.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So from Fritz and Petunia, Fritz has a puppet wife named Petunia. They had two kids. How did that happen?
Wooden Pinocchio business.
One's named Laszlo, and the other is named Tallulah. So they have two kids. On the other side, Bud and Lucille adopted
a child
named Cornelius. Tom Selleck.
Cornelius. Yes.
Tom Selleck. You want to say that? That's Tom Selleck married a girl named Franny Framaguchi. And she has two brothers named Art and Gaston. One's the pizza delivery guy, and one's the dude inventing the meatball cannon.
So she just, like, brought along her family to live there, too? Yes. Oh, I thought they were part of his family.
So technically speaking, some of them are not Robinsons.
Right.
They're by blood. Two of them are Tallulahs.
By marriage.
By marriage. Yeah.
But even then, they're not Robinsons.
And then Cornelius and Franny had Wilbur.
Right.
Okay, so let me get this straight.
That's
let me go back. Okay. You have
plus an octopus.
His parents.
Okay, yes.
His parents. The dad has two brothers.
Yes.
Grandpa has two brothers.
Yes. Younger brothers.
Yes.
Yes.
Gluttony guy.
Uh huh.
And one-haired wooden Pinocchio woman guy.
Yep. Yeah, those are the brothers.
So three brothers. Okay.
There's three brothers.
Pinocchio man had
two kids.
Children. Who knows how? Okay. Lard dude has no kids.
No kids. Just a wife.
Okay. Just the wife, and the wife is the one with the accent.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. And Cornelius's mom has nobody there. Like no siblings or nothing in that.
Correct.
Correct. Okay. Okay. It's just Cornelius got adopted.
Okay, so Cornelius is the only child.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And then Cornelius marries
Franny,
and then Franny brings along
two brothers
that are not Robinsons, yet the title suggests Meet the Robinsons.
Yes.
Okay.
They're Framaguchis.
And then there's those two heads that pop out of the pots like weeds.
We don't know where they're from. They're not even on the family tree because they're just there.
Okay. And that's the family?
Yes.
And the octopus is the butler.
Hold on. I forgot the Pinocchio has those two kids, the siblings. Mm-hmm. Okay, I got them. And then the two brothers,
Wilbur.
One's a pizza delivery dude.
Yeah, and makes meatball cannons.
Meatball cannons.
And meatball cannon guy plus Fatty's wife are the ones who are always racing.
Yeah.
Okay. Which I thought they were married. Anywho. Okay.
I thought they were siblings.
The point is, if this was my family,
oh God,
I'd be so lost. Like, I don't even know what's happening. And it's so funny because Lewis,
you have a huge family. What are you talking about?
I do have a huge family, and it does happen, and I don't know half of them. So that's very interesting to me. And you know, you just described that very well, Luis. You learned that very fast.
And I wasn't paying attention for half of it. So
so there you go. You met
impressive
the Robinsons.
Okay, so like, all right, maybe I'm just going to go out on a limb and say.
We missed really important characters. What about Carl and the bullfrogs?
That's right. Jazz frogs.
They were pretty cool, but they're not part of the family.
I'm just reading the family tree.
So my main qualm with this is that half of them are not Robinsons.
Oh, my gosh.
Hold on. I'm going full circle here. But then again.
Only two of them are not Robinsons.
Can I go full circle?
Okay.
Thank you. They did adopt a boy, which means they're already a blended family. And then all the other family members coming in continue making it a blended family. So in a way, it is sort of like what a modern family would look like. Therefore, Meet the Robinsons should not necessarily bug me, but technically speaking,
also,
it does.
They all live in the...
But I'm okay with it.
They all live in the Robinson household. Maybe that's why they're called.
Okay. Yeah, they do Robinsons. All live in the Robinson mansion.
Okay.
Franny, for Emily's point, Franny, the wife of Cornelius, has a bunch of bullfrogs, and she teaches them jazz music.
Yeah, she does.
That is pretty cool.
Yes. Yeah. And their butler's a squid.
They steal teeth.
Yeah, they
do. And also I like the fact that they're kind of like old. Like
they're old,
jazzy.
Yes.
They're
like
swing style. Cool cat talk.
Yeah.
Cool cat.
They're aristocrats.
Cool cat talk from the frogs.
Not that old.
Yeah.
He's like.
More like Frank Sinatra kind of like.
Lay some skin on me, scab cat. Oh my God.
Like those are some rocking times, Frankie.
All right. So.
You guys are a bunch of cools.
All right.
We have met the Robinsons. Andre, do you want to start us off in this timeline of craziness discussion?
So let's go through the timeline.
Because I feel like since this is a time travel movie, like you literally have to go in order or else you're like, what's happening? There's time loops happening.
Hey, here, let me just like blow your mind right now.
What?
This is the easiest timeline movie ever. It's like there are so many
easiest.
Yeah, this is pretty linear.
It's quite simple.
For a time travel movie, we could get some real cray cray going up. But go ahead.
It's
untypeable wobble.
It's very simple because there are multiple timelines, but they don't like branch off of each other.
Nope.
They just like intersect all into one into one timeline, which is nice.
Very nice. Thank you, Disney.
Thanks, Disney.
Thanks, Disney.
So we start off with little Lewis getting dropped off at the orphanage by his mother, who could not keep him anymore. Mildred picks him up with her big old head.
Oh my god!
She has
big old head.
Large head. That's the first thing I wrote down.
Big old head.
And she got big old head. Lewis grows up. Becomes a very smart, very, very smart young inventor kid, akin to a Jimmy Neutron.
Jimmy Neutron.
I thought of Jimmy Neutron a lot while watching this movie. He has a roommate named Goob, who is always tired because Lewis keeps him up with his inventing.
I love Goob.
Goob is quite hilarious.
Goob is hilarious.
It's hilarious. It's kind of sad because he never sleeps and he drinks coffee. And he like will sip his coffee and be like... That's a good cup of joe. Like, okay.
He's beyond his time. What, Lou?
My qualm with him was he was very passive aggressive. But then just now it dawned on me, he's too dang tired to be.
He's tired.
Right. He's too dang tired to be like confrontive.
Yeah, no, he could. There is no way he was going to be actually aggressive. He's
and
just
he like, has he's baseball like, to think about. You know, he can't be putting all his energy into
sports.
Confronting Lewis.
Okay, speaking of Goob, if we happen to come across our segment of Easter eggs, remind me.
I got.
Go
some,
ahead. And, why don't you just say
eggs.
Yours
yeah,
right
you
now,
can,
Luis?
You guys sure about
yeah,
that?
Yeah, go ahead.
Are we at that point?
We're at that point because you brought it up.
So if you guys pay attention to Goob's uniform, he tends to have, or his mascots are the dinosaurs.
Dinos.
Correct.
The dinos. Yeah. And there is a recurring theme in Pixar, if I am correct, that there is a green dinosaur throughout several of the Car movies. There's also
the Dinoco
good dinosaur. And at first, my fellow Vaulteers were saying that, no, I don't think it is because, you know, the dinosaur is actually facing back. And the Dinoco dinosaur and the good dinosaur are always facing forward. I don't know what type of dinosaur is it. Do you guys remember?
It's like that veggie dinosaur.
Yeah.
A Placocopitoporus.
Okay. That's the scientific name for
it
that
may
dinosaur.
Or may not be, but I'm going with that. anyways, so on his baseball logo, I thought at first it could have been like a little Easter egg, but his head is actually facing the opposite way, which made me kind of question it.
He's an apatosaur.
Apatosaur. Thank you. But then, you know, skipping the timeline, towards the end, you tend to see how his baseball team logo is represented, like on their banners and everything else for the baseball team, and it is the Dinoco dinosaur facing forward.
I would disagree with that.
Okay, I'm gonna
because this is not a Pixar movie.
Yes. Oh, it
but
is
I'm
not.
Gonna say
it is not a Pixar movie. But let's think about Pixar was just acquired. This is the first movie that John Lasseter executively produced. What if he snuck it in and put it the opposite direction?
I have the answer. This is not a Pixar Easter egg at all.
Thank you.
This dinosaur mascot for the baseball team that Goob plays for is an homage to Dinosaur Bob and his adventures with the family Lizardo by William Joyce, who is the person who wrote the book on which Meet the Robinsons is based on.
Oh, cool.
Yes. You know, Luis, I was vouching for you there because
so
I did make a connection.
Meet the Robinsons is based on a book called A Day with Wilbur Robinson.
Okay.
Which I never knew it was based on a book. Okay.
I didn't know that either. Yeah. So cool. So that dinosaur is just an homage to the author. It is an Easter
just
egg.
Not
but not
different
one,
Easter egg than
the
you
one
thought.
You were thinking
but good
of.
Catch,
but hold
Luis.
On, hold
that's
on.
Appreciated.
Okay. So time frame in terms of Pixar being acquired and all this stuff. Had Pixar already introduced the Dinoco dinosaur before this movie?
It was introduced in the first movie.
Yeah,
Toy Story.
You're right.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Mm-hmm.
I will say that I
appreciate your passion, Lou.
Boom, boom, boom.
There is also another Easter egg, though, like in the orphanage, since we're kind of
in the
orphanage right now. There's pictures of Walt Disney and Nikola Tesla on the wall in the orphanage.
I thought I saw Walt.
Tesla was Walt for a second.
Yes. Because it's a movie about inventing, and who's a better inventor right now than Tesla?
Like, well, and Albert Einstein.
Right,
well, he was.
He was
one of the better inventors, but...
You know what I mean.
Yeah.
And Albert Einstein's on the clock.
Yes, Albert Einstein is the face of the clock.
So there was like little homages to inventors, and we'll come full circle with the Walt Disney at the end, but I thought it was really cool that there was pictures of these, you know, people that you can aspire to be in the orphanage.
Yeah. True. Cool. So going back to the timeline.
So yeah, so
but
Lewis,
hold on, can we stop on the orphanage since we're there? I'll only say one thing.
Yes.
I appreciate the view of orphanages from this movie.
Yeah.
Because I feel like in every other child's movie, and I can understand where like a kid would think the orphanage is like the worst place ever.
Yeah.
But Annie. Mildred is literally the best.
Yes.
Yeah.
She really cares about them.
She wants them to have their interviews. Yeah. And like tries to prepare them.
And she tries her best to be like doing what's best for them versus like what's best for the orphanage or like getting money or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I just wanted to throw out that I like that they didn't take the very standard road of like, oh my god, the dredgers
are evil.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that was really nice. I like that.
I like that too. Mildred, played by Angela Bassett. Good job, Mildred.
Only thing that's sad about good the Mama orphanage Wakanda is they have, I want to talk about Lewis a little bit. Okay. So they have these interviews, and Lewis is in this interview, and he just invented this really cool thing, and he's so excited about, he said the biggest problem, and I bet it is the biggest problem in your 12-year-old childhood mind, is that his peanut butter and his jelly needs to be proportionate on a sandwich so that it's not too mushy in your mouth and you can't talk or it can't squirt out the sides. Like, I relate to that on another level. Hashtag always snacking. So, like...
Well, especially for a kid. That's totally important.
And he's so excited to tell these potential adoptive parents about it. And the dad is literally just like, so sports.
Right.
You know what I mean?
He completely disregards all of his science-y.
And I think there was a moment when he was talking to Mildred and he's like, I've had 127 interviews and nobody wants me. And that to me, like, just like, it really hit me in the heartstrings. Like, this poor kid is like the smartest kid of his generation and like nobody wants him because sports.
Right.
Well, and I think that's another good
juxtaposition for Goob. Yeah.
Which, and it's funny too, because I find a lot of connections between Sword in the Stone and this movie, which is weird because if you think about it, the whole Sword in the Stone was like brains over brawn. And you saw like this Walt Disney-ish type, what do you call it? Like tutor, I guess, in and trying to enforce the fact that smarts are important and so is education and making sure that you follow your dreams and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really interesting that so many years later, it's kind of, I mean, obviously it's a universal theme, but
especially for Walt Disney.
But but that like it's always a problem. Like, hey, like sports are important. So is so is everything.
Yeah.
Like in proportion, people. Mm-hmm. It's not just about peanut butter and jelly. It's about life.
Yeah.
Balance.
And then also go back to the timeline here. So Lewis is feeling really down on himself, but his science teacher is like, hey, listen, there's gonna be this science fair. So like make an invention. And he's like so excited. He puts his heart and his soul into this memory thing. He doesn't want to interview for parents anymore. He's gonna remember his mom.
He puts his full focus into this recreation machine, which is a brilliant idea.
Brilliant,
I kind of wish it was real. I forget stuff all the time. It would be nice to be able to recreate some of my memories.
That'd be awful because I'm a total blocker-outer. Like I need to block that stuff out.
It's like a technological pensieve.
Yeah, exactly.
So he invents his memory machine. He takes it to the science fair where he meets Wilbur, time cop.
Of the future.
From the future.
No, he's Jimmy Neutron. He'd never had a name.
He's Jimmy Neutron, like literally.
Yeah, I guess he introduces himself as Wilbur, but I forgot his name too until
there is one person in this whole world that's named Wilbur and it's not even a person.
It's a pig.
And that's all there is. There's no other Wilbur's. Go ahead.
I wonder why his name is Wilbur of all names. Maybe
ask
maybe
Cornelius.
Cornelius loved Charlotte's Web or something like that. He meets Wilbur. Memory machine is foiled, is tampered with by
bowler hat guy.
Bowler hat guy who comes in from the future as well.
So here's our first introduction to bowler hat guy.
And I love that his name is bowler hat guy.
Because
that is such a kid thing to call someone. It's actually an Emily thing to call people. They're like, you know, the bowler hat guy?
That's bowler hat guy over there.
The guy with the hair, you know.
So bowler hat guy ruins his machine. His whole project gets ruined. He's feeling really down on himself. And then Wilbur comes in, and I can't remember exactly what he says, but he's like, I'm from the future. I'm supposed to help you. Something about the time. And he's like, the future? Yeah, right.
There's no way you're from the
future. And Wilbert's like, let me prove you wrong. And he just takes him to the future. Like, that's such a kid thing to do. Be like, nuh-uh, it is true. And he's like, nah, I don't believe you. Well, I'm going to show you.
And in doing so, Wilbert truly ruins the timeline. You should not be grabbing people from the past and bringing them to the future.
Nope. Yeah, it's and that's where idea. That's where the qualms with this movie comes in, only because having watched lots of time travel-y things, this is where, like...
We're experts.
I don't know about experts, but... I mean,
well, I'm an expert.
Okay, well then, Luis, you explain to us how not only does, you know, disrupting the timeline mess up the timeline, mm-hmm. but then eventually meeting a version of yourself in the future literally makes time fold in on itself. So Disney, whoa.
Technically speaking, you're not supposed to see the future, because if you see something that you do not like, you're going to do everything to try to avoid it. And therefore,
that will change the future.
Yeah, and it will change the future. So anybody who is in said future could run the risk of being non-existent.
Well, and I think that's why Carl, the machine helper friend of the robot, family, yeah. was like, you need to figure this out, because there's like a 99.9999999999 chance, Wilbur, that you're not going to exist if you don't get this right.
Never tell me the odds.
Thanks, Han Solo.
But seriously, like, that it could have gone so wrong so many ways. Right. But I guess the question of fate comes in again, mm-hmm. with Sword in the Stone. Mm-hmm. Would he have been king if Merlin wasn't there?
Right.
Would
he have invented all of this stuff if he hadn't seen it all in the first place?
Exactly. Yes. But I think that's where we, like, us as the Wall Vault, we watched this movie together and we had the conversation. Would that have all happened? And Michelle and I tend to believe maybe not, because
he wouldn't have believed in himself.
He needed to know that he had
could do it.
He could do
things. He was
things.
Down. Nobody wanted to adopt him 127 times. His invention failed. The science teacher who actually believed in him was like,
got on him.
Got down right. on him, mm-hmm. too. You know, at the end, he had nothing. He was like at the lowest of the low point in his self-esteem. I don't think if he had not gone to the future and seen all of this stuff, that none of it would have happened.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I think he needed to see it to believe in himself.
Although he could have just had a little bit more positive reinforcement from like his science teacher or something like that. That probably would have helped.
I mean, yeah, but would it have helped enough?
Once we get, I mean, if we can get to that point when the main issue that I have with the time travel.
We'll go ahead and get there.
So let's when he's, yeah, okay, I'll agree with you in every single aspect up until the point he sees himself.
There's in the
future. No, time in travel, the future. Everything would be completely screwed up.
Yes.
So, yes, he probably he did go into the future. He did see all these things. He did invent some. Did give him a boost. But that would have been fine without him having to see himself.
They could have made this movie work without him seeing himself.
Sure.
And I can agree with that. Let's think about time travel in general. Okay, I'm taking this back to Harry Potter. But when Hermione has the time turner, the number one rule is, like, don't see yourself.
Right.
Doctor Who, number one rule. Don't see yourself.
Just to play devil's advocate, in Harry Potter, when the only reason that Harry can do his full-on Patronus is because he sees himself do it.
Well, but he doesn't know it's himself.
That's true.
Yeah,
he doesn't
know
it's himself.
He thinks it's his dad because
he's
silly.
And then also, we just rewatched Doctor Strange with like the time stone stuff, and they're like, do not warp time.
Don't,
like, you're going to mess up everything. Do not tamper with time. The time stone is like
dangerous.
The butterfly effect.
Yeah.
Yes, butterfly effect. So they do kind of get away from this in this movie, but I want to say it's almost a good thing they did, because then this movie could have been 3 hours long. Like,
no, but
I could have seen,
remember he came home and everyone was like, oh, business. Like, right. You best get him out of here, right? Because
right.
because Cornelius was walking up and he didn't understand it, really.
Yeah.
They could have cut from that scene and been like, it was very obvious who it was. You didn't
right.
have to see the guy to
the
know.
The hair gave him away.
You know?
Yeah.
And so they could have said something like, you know, and this is where you have to go. And we all know mm-hmm. what it was. And it would have almost been a little bit more beautiful, I think, just because then you would have been left wanting to see him, but you
right.
didn't.
Yeah.
Because you know
yeah.
sometimes, like, when you want something really bad, it actually makes it, like, better.
Or
yeah.
they
more sweet.
They could have, like, before he saw himself in the future, he could have gone back to the past, lived out his life, and then they cut back
oh,
to the
exactly.
future where he's an adult and
oh,
then show
yeah.
him like that.
Yeah.
That would have been.
Because that's my only problem. I feel like, ooh, that messed up your whole biz.
Yeah. yeah.
Because how then he's just creating stuff you already created?
Right, yeah. It's
yeah.
like...
How unimaginative. You already
yeah.
know now.
Or even, like, he could have gone back into the past and been like, I don't even have to try because I know that
exactly.
this is all going to happen, you know? there's that as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's just take that whole point out, and then I feel better about it.
Yes. So he's in the future now, little Lewis. And
this
family, okay, after the whole, like, let's meet the Robinsons, which we've talked about the timeline already, that family is so ready to adopt him that day, which has never happened to Lewis, that Lewis is like, wow, like, this is my family. I want to stay.
So sad.
And then Wilbur has to take his hat off. He takes the hat off. And then, of course, Cornelius and Lewis, we all know they're the same person. And so they have bright blonde hair. And the family literally is like, ooh, you have to leave. And they don't even explain it to him at all
because
they don't.
Well, because they don't want to
mess up
the
timeline, which I understand. But I can't imagine, like, if I was Lewis, like, the past doesn't want me, future doesn't want me.
Yeah,
I would have gone to Bowler Hat Guy too. So this at this point, Bowler Hat Guy shows up and it's like, "Hello, like,
yeah,
come to my side."
Did they explain why the blonde hair was important? Did they explain why that there's no one in the future with blonde hair?
I think it's just not in their family.
Yeah.
But why would it matter? They didn't know he was a part of the family. They thought he was just some rando.
But they would have.
They knew a time machine was missing.
Wilbur would have gotten in trouble if they knew that Lewis, young Lewis, was there.
No, but
they knew instantly who it was
because of his,
Cornelius because has his, that distinct
it's
blonde
that exact
hair.
Same hair. No one else
He's
has hair like
that. He's a smart little
that.
Boy. A time machine is missing. They put
oh,
two
I thought
two
it
together.
Was just because he had blonde hair. Like, no one in the future had blonde hair.
No, I think other people have blonde hair, but they don't have super tall, spiky blonde hair and glasses and blue eyes and invent stuff.
Yeah. So it gave it away.
Totally plausible. Okay, go ahead.
First of all, let's talk about disciplining your children, because Wilbur's mom is like, "Honey, when you leave the garage, don't forget to latch the door." And he just leaves it open and gets a dang time machine stolen. Like, if there was a time machine in my garage, I would have 10,000 locks, like, on that garage. Like,
and he could still leave it open, though.
Nobody's
right. Because he walked out.
Come on. It's all your fault, Wilbur. It was all Wilbur's fault.
This is all, it's all Wilbur's fault.
There is. So there's two time machines. Bowler Hat Guy steals one, and Wilbur has the other. So going back to Bowler Hat Guy, who is the real villain? Bowler Hat Guy or the bowler hat?
Doris.
The bowler hat, obviously.
Doris.
So I love Bowler Hat Guy. He's a very silly and very incompetent villain.
Oh,
he
so
is wearing
bad.
A leotard.
Very form-fitted.
Quilted form-fitted leotard. His hair has this weird curly Q on top of his head, and he's basically bald. He looks
bald.
Like Olaf from... Count yeah. Olaf from series of unfortunate events.
Right. Yes. He looks like an old timey villain. He's got a big old mustache. I'm very surprised he didn't tie a lady to a train tracks in this movie. Did
he? Oh, 100%. No, well, and here's my problem. Sense. We haven't said it yet, and everyone has the same problem with him. The teeth.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
There's 900 teeth in his mouth.
He has 1,000 teeth.
They're long and pointy. And my problem with it is no one's teeth grow from one looking one way to another way. So I know that. Mm. So spoiler.
Goob.
He's Goob.
He's Goob
in the future. But like your teeth don't grow into some other. Like
Goob had baby teeth. His adult teeth grew.
He had baby teeth at 12. What are you, the girl squirrel from Sword in the Stone? It's a problem. Those teeth are disgusting.
Teeth are nasty. Goob should have went to a dentist, but orphan. So he never left that room, dude. He was just in there wallowing.
For 25 years.
Thinking that Lewis ruined his life.
More like 40 years. 50?
And why does he think
it's very interesting.
Lewis ruined his life? Let's talk about that.
Hey, but hold on.
Because that's where
on.
His villainy comes
Goob
from.
Goob could have been... He doesn't have to be 12. He could have been.
He could have been younger. Yeah,
an 8-year-old have baby teeth.
Well, that's a lot possible than a 12-year-old.
I don't know.
Was he four on the little league team?
So Goob, I talk about Goob a lot because Goob as a boy is hilarious and he loves coffee and he has these giant bags under his eyes because he's always tired. And I just relate to him because that's hilarious for some reason to me. I don't know, but Goob is very into baseball, and Lewis is very into inventing. And in order to be good at a baseball game, you need to sleep, or else you're going to fall asleep at your baseball game and not catch the baseball.
This is baseball 101, people.
Which happened. And then all of his baseball team people beat him up. He said his steak.
That's his first freaking problem. Yeah. Like, get on a nicer baseball team.
Exactly. His steak was his only friend that he was icing his eye with. He literally says, "Steak, you're my only friend." Which is so
That's so funny.
But then Goob goes a little crazy. So because he didn't win this baseball game, everybody leaves the orphanage and he just grows up still wearing his baseball outfit.
He pretty much still blames being a creep. But it's because he blames
Lewis
for that one moment in his life.
Right. He was keeping him up.
Yeah, he wasn't able to get past that. And he even says, like, later on at some point, like, hold on to, like, he meets himself as a younger boy and he's like
hold on to that anger.
And, you know,
don't let it go.
And he just the poor kid needs some help. And instead of getting real help, he gets help from Hat Doris.
That was built by older Lewis.
Cornelius.
So he built Lewis. Cornelius, yes. Well, he invents all of these things and he invented this hat that was supposed to be like a helping hat. Like brush your teeth and comb your hair and like do all this stuff.
That's your first problem. Do it yourself.
Where this hat went like crazy, right?
A normal helping hat, but the helping hat was too smart.
It was like, dude, I can do way much more.
That's why robots are not the future. Go ahead.
Whatever.
Doris is straight up evil. So Doris has a bone to pick with Lewis because Lewis was like, nope, no more Doris. No more Doris invention.
It's interesting. Doris and bowler hat guy, Goob, both felt so dejected by Lewis that they had to take revenge upon him and his
team up
family.
But I like it because it's young him and old him, so they like can go and ruin up his whole timeline. Like, we're messing up your whole life, not just half of it.
So Doris is by far like the smartest villain. She's like, we're gonna steal this time machine, we're gonna go back in time, we're gonna steal his memory invention, which gets him his start. And then you're going to introduce the memory invention and then your life is going to be great. Mm-hmm. Rich and famous. And then I'm just going to forget all about you and take over the world.
Yeah. That whole sequence where Doris takes over
is terrifying.
The Earth is very scary. It's very creepy.
Thank you, John Lasseter, for scaring the wits out of us.
Yeah, he said the villain wasn't scary enough. So
Doris, we got to add a Doris.
So Doris is introduced and the movie was made much
so
much
terrifying. So wouldn't you put the hat on Doris? There's actually a scene too where there's like a mini Doris and the hat goes on the frog.
Really cute. Little mini Doris.
It goes on the frog and he's like, you're now my slave. And, and the frog is like, okay. Like being all robotic.
Excellent.
And the best part is when bowler hat guy is like telling mini Doris on the frog. He's telling the frog what to do and the frog's like, I don't think you thought this plan through. And then it happens again when the mini bowler hat ends up on the dinosaur. So he goes back into the past, steals the dinosaur, and the dinosaur is trying to catch everybody, and he can't. He's like, because I have a big head and little arms. I don't think you thought this plan through. Poor bowler hat guy.
He's Goob in a 40-50-year-old
body. Yeah,
he never matured.
He never matured.
He used his little Lisa Frank
binder and his little
checklist, and it's
catch that bleep guy.
Catch that bleeping boy.
You know, it's very sad.
Yeah.
And I think that's what gets you about this movie once you really realize like the whole
once
scope
it comes
of it
together.
It's actually super sad.
Right. That Goob from that one baseball game that he fell asleep from, his whole life went to shambles and he ended up enacting revenge upon Cornelius.
And you almost wish too, like at least for me, there's a point where young Lewis is talking to Wilbur and is like, I'm your father and you tell him that he's going to be adopted into this family or whatever. And he leaves.
Yeah.
You know, he runs away and you kind of hope that like he's able to make it because that's really sad. His whole life plan was to have revenge. And then he realized that his only friend that he thought was really a friend was Doris. Totally betrayed him the whole time. Mm-hmm. And so now it's like, come on, you need a loving family.
Goob can't win, man. But it is nice because we'll talk about it comes full circle for Goob. So once everything gets fixed, will Lewis, when he goes back in the future, is like, Goob, wake up! Like during the game, you know? And he ends up catching the ball. And then the mom and dad that didn't want Lewis wanted Goob because Goob likes sports.
Sports!
Yeah, that's right.
So they adopted
sports
Goob.
Sports brought them together.
Yeah.
Isn't that nice?
So then hopefully he doesn't turn into like some crazy other version of the future. See? Right. Messing with the timey-wimey.
Wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey stuff.
The question that I have is that all of this time travel stuff ended up like being really bad for Goob. So do you think that once Lewis went back to the present and got adopted and started inventing all of this stuff in his lab, do you think that he created those time machines again?
I know. That's where I'm like okay,
I will say this. There, it says that
What are you reading?
The fate of the second time machine is never revealed. Lewis brought Goob back to the future in the first one, which means that the second time machine is still in the present. So I don't know if he created it, if that time machine is now in the present.
Right.
So there's like some weird time machine stuff going.
There was a sequel planned for this movie. Okay, so let me explain
that. Sorry. Let me explain that. Time-wise,
yes,
he has to create the time machines because all that has to happen all over again.
Mm. Which true. I hate. That's the part but about time.
Again, so it's like a time loop. Yeah, that'll but just what confuses happening.
Me is right. the fact that it won't happen again because if Goob got adopted.
Goob gets adopted. He's on a totally different path. So that time machine is not going to be stolen by Boulder Hat Guy because Boulder Hat Guy probably
it will not exist.
And that's why I'm saying this movie is completely off with the whole time.
And maybe this would have been explained in the sequel, but that got canceled.
But he also said, but remember, he also said, so they cleared it up actually. He gets adopted, Goob. Yes. And Lewis now knows not to create the hat.
Ah.
So oh, that's in right. both ways, he doesn't create Doris.
There's really no way for Bowler Hat Guy to be able to get back because he's no longer, well, he's hopefully no longer Bowler Hat Guy, right. but there's no Doris to help
correct,
him get
correct.
There.
You're right.
He created Lewis Point.
Point one?
Stop, no.
Instead
he's
of Flash,
to say Flash
point, he created Lewis Point.
Oh my God. This is not Flash Point.
Embarrassingly, I knew exactly what he was trying to say.
I should too because I watched the Flash.
That's pretty good. It is. Yeah. It's Lewis Point.
It's an alternate reality.
That's hilarious.
And somehow.
Which you're also not supposed to do.
Yeah. Which the Flash always does.
Yeah.
Point is.
That's why you don't mess with time.
The time worked itself out. Okay. I have two things. So another fun fact, like we were talking about, there's supposed to be a sequel to this movie. The title of the sequel was going to called Meet the Robinsons, The First Date. So was it going to be about Lewis meeting,
Franny?
You know, like at the end of the movie where he meets the little girl with the frogs and that ends up being Franny. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know if it was going to be like about their relationship or something.
That's a really stupid name for a second movie.
Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, that was the working title. It was never gotten made. I'm sure they would have changed it, but like
Lord
crazy.
That's real bad.
Another fun fact, which I want Andre to tell this one, cause you can probably tell it better than me. Tom Selleck.
Selleck.
There's a hilarious joke where, Wilbur is explaining the family to Lewis right when they get to the future, and he goes, "Oh, what does your dad look like?" And Wilbur goes, "He looks like Tom Selleck." And then a picture of Tom Selleck appears, and then
a literal picture of Tom Selleck in the movie when they're explaining
the family tree,
which is very funny. And then you come to find out that Tom Selleck plays the voice of Cornelius,
older Lewis, so funny
at the end of the movie.
Quite hilarious.
That is very good. That's like one of the best Easter eggs. I really like that.
Jolly good.
Hey, Luis, do you have a battle for us?
Yes, this week I have an interesting one.
Battle.
Battle. Is this the Doctor Who theme song?
Alrighty then, faithful listeners. For this week's battle, I pose the question, who is a better inventor? Cornelius, a.k.a. Lewis, from Meet the Robinsons, or Hiro Hamada from Big Hero 6?
Ooh. Oh, that's a good one. I love Big Hero 6. Oh,
good
God.
Ready, question.
Go.
Oh, wow. I never even thought about comparing those two movies because there probably is a lot of similarities with like inventions and things like that.
Smart boys.
Smart boys. Oh, he creates Baymax, which is a version of the helping. No, he doesn't create
That's
Baymax.
His older brother creates Baymax.
Dang it.
But he tricks Baymax out.
I was going to say Baymax can be similar to Doris, but like Doris ended up being evil and Baymax ended up being good because he's a helping robot and Doris is a helping robot.
Yeah,
true.
What does Hiro actually invent?
I'm trying to look
because I thought he invented Baymax. And
I haven't seen Big Hero 6 in a while.
If I remember correctly, he doesn't necessarily invent his friend's suits and superpowers. He just invents them,
I guess? Can, like,
he reimagines them.
Yeah, he takes all of their base ideas and...
Tricks them out
and turns them into weapons and armor and stuff
right.
like that.
Right. You know what? You know who he is? He's Snoop Dogg because he pimps their ride.
You mean, wasn't Snoop? What's his name?
50 Cent?
It's Exhibit.
Exhibit! You're right. It's totally Exhibit.
Okay, so one thing I do remember him
but
inventing...
But seriously, he pimps their ride.
That's hilarious.
He invented his little robot, who was a BA robot, and then... He invented those little black triangle things that pretty much could do anything.
What little robot?
So he had a robot that was a big version of those little black things.
Yeah, he did.
Connect together.
Yeah, he did. In his room.
Very beginning of the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Robots, remember?
Yes.
So he did
invent
those two things.
I have to watch Big Hero 6 again.
Oh, man.
I really like
that's
that.
That's the only thing I remember him inventing.
Yeah, I don't think, like, other than the armor for Baymax, I don't think...
But again, he's just, like, adding on top of something that was already invented.
Yeah. So not too much original work from Hero. But it still takes some genius-level stuff for him to be able to do all this, right?
Well, that black matter, the boxes,
it's
is
legit.
Pretty
yeah.
freaking
scary, though.
It's incredible.
I'm going to go... with Lewis, just because he invented a freaking time machine.
I'm going to say for invention purposes,
yes,
Lewis. But that doesn't mean that the creative quality is any less with Hero.
Right.
Because I feel like it takes a whole nother level of like
intellect
to be able to take something that seems really good and then create it into
make something better. Yeah.
You know?
And it's also interesting because we're able to see the evolution of Lewis's work. We see how his peanut butter and jelly machine is in its first stages, and then what it's like, you know, 30 years later or whatever. We see his robot, we see the time machines, we see all
you
of
see
that
his
stuff in
his
the
peanut butter and jelly
machine. We see all of his and all of the influences his work has on the entire rest of the city and the world, whereas you don't get to see that with Hero's stuff. You don't know what Hero's inventions are going to be like when he's 35
and you're assuming that it's a very short period of time in Big Hero 6. Like, it goes from like everything, like the whole period of time that the movie takes place, maybe like a couple months,
right?
Maybe
like 6 months, maybe. Yeah.
You know, so imagine what would happen with him.
True.
40 years later.
True, but for all intents and purposes, for this battle, I'm going to say Lewis.
I as well.
Yeah, I think. Well, okay, I think Lewis is the better inventor, but I like Hero's inventions more.
Yeah, but that wasn't a question.
Okay.
I agree with that as well.
Lewis wins.
Lewis?
I disagree with all y'all.
Ooh.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Hit us with it.
So, based on my understanding, I do know that Lewis is 12. Okay. Hero is
14.
Not that far off. 2 years older. Okay. Most of Lewis's inventions are extremely primitive. The function at the end is... good, and I guess he gets what he needs, but it's not advanced in
but
terms
he doesn't
of
have the
it's a
same,
different time period.
No, but he doesn't have the same resources as Hero does.
True.
Yeah.
Hero goes to the school and gets all of that cool stuff from the kids who are already like inventing stuff.
Lewis
what about his
that memory machine in an orphanage?
His brother's in college right now, so he brings all those materials home.
No, he created that little robot and the same idea. He created it himself.
But it's still
but
a different
really like
time period.
Okay, it's my explanation. All right,
okay.
So listen. He's able to do all that, okay, regardless of resources or not.
Sure.
Only 2 years older. And granted, you don't see his end products like you do with Lewis, but if he's able to do that and only be 2 years older, his
potential
is going to be so much higher than Lewis's.
I don't disagree with you, but your question was not about who will eventually be the best inventor.
Oh, exactly. So therefore, I'm still sticking with Hero is the better inventor because of the fact that he was able to achieve more given their relatively close age.
Okay.
All right.
That is your opinion.
Of course, and that's all your guys'
all
right.
opinion
as well.
That's right.
There is our battle.
And again, another fair... reminder, because this is our own opinion, it doesn't mean we're all going to be 100% accurate. So
true.
Yeah. You know,
just
yeah,
to give you guys
truth.
Another disclaimer.
I need to watch Big Hero 6 again to be accurate.
Guys, comment on the Instagram post for this episode and tell us who you think would win
definitely.
This battle. Hero
definitely.
Or
we'd love to hear your guys' opinions as well.
Yeah. And all you know right. what? We'll probably, we know that Big Hero 6 is on the docket for the next couple months.
It's going to be in there somewhere.
We'll be in there soon. We'll bring this back up.
I know. We'll probably be like, shoot.
Battle 2.0.
Yes.
Meet the Robinsons' first date of Baymax and Doris.
A sequel to this battle.
I got two more topics for this movie.
Go ahead.
First one. Okay. Music. We just talked about how the music was so great in Sword in the Stone. But during this animation time period, if we're thinking about all of these animated movies that came out around this time period, they didn't have original music. Like a song. Like musical.
Sure,
like, that I'm going to sing in the car. But it did have like a song by All American Rejects and like Matchbox 20 and like things going on. So that was like a time period where they were like taking other songs and putting them in. And I don't know if I'm a fan of that.
I don't think that they were taking songs. I think that they were songs written for the movie or like new songs that were put into the movie. I don't think it was like that was a song on the radio and then they like threw it in.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what I mean? I know.
But I totally understand.
Contracted soundtrack kind of thing.
But I understand what you're saying.
I'm not a fan of that strategy.
Well, I'm not a huge fan because one of the things, it's very obvious with us being musical people and we're always talking about the music. It's hard for me to connect with a movie if I don't hear something and it makes me think of the movie.
Right.
So, and we talked about that like in Zootopia where they have a song, but the whole soundtrack doesn't really like pull in as well as you might have hoped.
Right.
And this movie, if you played me some background music, I would not be able to pin
it. No, me
either. The music was composed by Danny Elfman, and this is probably one of the least recognizable Danny Elfman scores that I've
which
that
is interesting
in
I would never have pegged him as the
right. I didn't
no,
hear
me either.
The music and think oh it sounds Danny Elfman-ish
no
because he definitely has some recognizable work, you know, the dude's not unknown.
Truth. So that's really interesting for that piece. So I agree with you, the music here was not for me the best, especially because we're watching the movie right, and right at the end the Matchbox 20 song comes out. Is it These Small Hours? Is that what the song's called?
Yeah, These Small Hours.
And I literally look at Michelle and Andre and I'm like, wow, this just blasted me back to like a very specific time period,
yeah,
right?
Did.
Because that song played on the radio and in no way would I have associated it to the movie. And so I'm thinking like, wow, this, it doesn't fit the movie for me.
Right.
When I hear it, I was like, this is very out of place. But then again, I guess it's just the way that they, you know, the way that they choose to add music to certain movies. But to me, it was very out of place.
Okay, I didn't, like, know that song necessarily before we watched it. I'm sure I've heard it before, but I didn't.
Well, that's your first problem.
I didn't
you need
know
to
the
get
name
Matchbox 20 on your life.
Okay, so it's Matchbox 20? I don't see Matchbox 20 in the soundtrack for this movie.
Rob Thomas, though.
Oh, Rob Thomas. Rob Thomas.
Get me some
Little Wonders by Rob Thomas. Okay, that's what we're talking about. Sorry.
Sorry. We said Matchbox 20, but yes. You know.
There's also the All American Rejects. They
what
might
song
be giants.
Is that?
All American Rejects did a
future
song called The Future Has Arrived.
Yeah,
they Might Be Giants has a song called There's a Great Big Beautiful Tomorrow. And the Jonas Brothers have a song called Kids of the Future.
We're the kids of the future.
No,
wow.
That's in Jimmy Neutron. And that's called Kids of America.
Just kidding. Anyways, moving along. The point is music.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to come full circle here with the main reason that I love this movie. So we talked about how in the orphanage, there's pictures of people that Lewis can aspire to be. So there was Einstein and Tesla and Walt Disney. This entire movie is based on a quote by Walt Disney, which they put at the end. Like, I shouldn't say it's based off the quote because it's based off a book, obviously, but it kind of inspired them. And one of the animators on this movie died, I think, and this was, like, one of the quotes from Walt Disney that he, like, really connected with. Mm. So at the end of the movie, a quote comes on the screen, and it says, "Around here, however, we don't look backwards for very long. We keep moving forward, opening up new doors and doing new things because we're curious, and curiosity keeps leading us down new paths." And then, like, the little thing comes off and it says Walt Disney. And every time I see that, like, I watch this movie, I literally get the chills so bad. Because
it's so weird. I just
amazing.
Got the chills when
I
you said that.
I got the chills right now, too. But the biggest thing, and we even paused during this introduction, Lewis fails. He's at the kitchen dinner table, and they're like, "We have to have a peanut butter and jelly sandwich." And they bring out the invention, which is the invention that he made as a kid, and it's jammed. And they're like, the uncle saw the toast. Like, you need to fix this.
Uncle Joe is getting angry.
And he didn't. Fatty. Lo and behold, he didn't fix it. It goes everywhere. And they all clap, and they're like, yes, you failed. Great job. And he's like, what? And they're like, yeah, keep moving forward. And this is one of those kids' movies where they, like, really reiterate how important it is to fail and, like, keep moving forward. And I absolutely love that scene, because that's when you can kind of see, like, a light come on for Lewis. Like, his attitude starts to change. Mm-hmm. And it's
funny, I love because it. Right before we started this podcast, you guys, not literally, but today, when we were going to record, we were having not a heated discussion amongst, like not heated at each other, but heated in general about just kind of the Disney community today, mm-hmm. and how people get so hung up on what the Disney parks are doing and the Disney company, and how people get really emotional about
when things change.
And of course, we all have nostalgia moments about where we were when we saw something for the first time, mm-hmm. or how things have been, or this or that. But I think that we forget that Walt Disney's view of the world was a changing open door.
Yeah.
And he would be beautiful tomorrow.
And when it kind of trips me out, actually, when people get so hung up on things staying the same, or when things don't work so perfectly.
Right. They really want to hold on to the past.
Yeah. And or they're quick to judge, like, oh my God, that's going to be so stupid. Like, they don't agree with things. Well, if you don't fail, how are you going to know what the next best thing is?
Mm-hmm. Because Walt Disney failed multiple times in his life. I think you read that biography on him too. We both had this book and we kind of shared it. It was basically about Walt Disney's coming to being. Like, well, he failed a lot.
Well, there was
y'all remember Oswald?
Oh. Well, yeah. there was a what do you call it? Like a docudrama type of thing of his early life on Netflix for a while. Luis and I watched it, and legitimately, it was depressing.
Yeah.
About him and how he, like, found the mouse that, like, actually, like a mouse Mickey on mouse? A street that he was, like, sitting on.
Oh.
At his lowest point of life. Like, he was not the most...
He hit rock bottom.
He hit the bottom of bottoms, guys. Yeah. And so I think a lot of times people just get really emotional because we're attached to Disney. Mm-hmm. But this brings it back. Like, hey, we're always going to change.
Right. And it's going to keep changing. And it's going to keep getting better.
And if it doesn't change, it becomes...
stagnant.
And really...
Boring,
yeah.
Yeah.
And I think because they put that in the movie, like, I really love how they pushed, like, that. Like, when they're clapping, they're like, you failed. Great job. Like, mm-hmm. I absolutely love that and the keep moving forward thing. But then they just had to tie it into Disney as well with, like, that little sentimental heartstring at the bottom. And like I said, every time I get chills. Mm-hmm. So that's really what cohesively ties this movie together. And this is one of those movies where you watch it, it's confusing, confusing, confusing. And then at the end, you're like, oh,
mm-hmm.
that was great.
Oh, yeah.
Type of thing. So I think that's why I really like this movie a lot. But
yeah, the heartstrings. I really like that sentiment of keep moving forward. That failure is not just okay. It's encouraged. Like, you should be failing a bunch because it's going to make
that
you
means you're trying.
So much better at what you're trying to achieve.
That's good so stuff. Good. With that being said, what does this have on Rotten Tomatoes?
Okay, the
I'm
ratings.
A little afraid, though.
Ratings for
I
this
think
movie.
I am too.
So this movie, it didn't do great. Okay, it has
a lot of movies during this time period for Disney did not.
Sure, it has a 67% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is still
not off.
No.
Still fresh, not rotten.
No, it's pretty. That's pretty dank.
It's a D.
Go ahead.
67% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Ratatouille came out the same year, though.
It has
so,
a 6.9 you know. Out of 10 on IMDb.
And a what?
6.9 out of 10, and a 61. Metascore.
Man, they trying to give you D's all the way across, yeah. Robinson.
This wasn't a beautiful time for Disney.
And it didn't make a lot of money either. The budget was $150 million and it made $169 million, which is, you know, almost $20 million more, but it's still not a huge profit.
Grand
not anywhere
scheme
near
of things, a lot of time
the amount
was
of profit
spent
that
for not
Disney
much
wants to
profit.
Make on a movie.
Yeah.
I think it's really funny because I think that time periods when things come out is just as important as it is the quality of the movie.
Yeah.
And I think that if this movie had come out later on, I think it would have done a lot better.
I think so too.
Yeah.
I think it would have gotten a lot more acclaim. I think, like you
Same
said,
with
Michelle,
Brother Bear.
Yeah, I think a lot of these movies came out in an era where either it wasn't as highly encouraged in the box office, like you said, Ratatouille came out the same year.
Yeah.
Sometimes I do wonder a little bit, like, how the strategy of movies coming out,
the release schedules,
like how well did you think that out? Just yeah. because, like, if there is another movie that you're pushing really hard, don't set it out a month before or right. whatever.
Don't yeah. release it around Ratatouille.
I
like,
think that's
no.
happening this year. Like, there's going to be
there's yes. a lot of stuff
like,
this
like
year.
Christopher Robin, that movie,
Mary
and
Poppins.
And the Nutcracker are coming out within like a month of each other or something like
Mary
that.
Mary Poppins Returns Mary is coming Poppins out around the same out. Time.
It's
going to be
really
interesting.
I mean, it is what it is, but. I mean, we're watching them, but
yeah.
it, but
we'll,
our normal,
we'll
our everyday watchers coming out and watching every Marvel blockbuster and then every movie
every
around
Disney
Christmas.
Movie.
I don't know. Maybe they mm-hmm. are, but mm.
the numbers will let us know. Anyway,
let's score it.
Rating, Andre.
My rating for this movie is
Morse code
rating.
I think I'm gonna give this movie an 8. I think it's solid. It makes me laugh a lot, and I really enjoyed, especially the very first time I saw it, I really enjoyed the twist of Goob being the
yeah, yeah, yeah.
guy. That really hit very hard for me the first time I watched
it. So clever.
It. And it's still extremely fun to see the upon a second viewing. So yeah, 8.0.
All right, so mine is actually going to be lower than yours.
Of course,
I really didn't
old man,
watch
negative.
This movie. I really didn't. I did not like it. The fact that, you know, you had all these terrible family members all together. Oh. Gluttony pissed me off.
Oh,
and,
my gosh.
Uncle Joe,
I really
Uncle
was
Joe,
not about
though.
It, but you know what? Once at the beginning when Michelle just explained the entire family tree, I started to feel a little bit okay with it. And, you know, as a result of that, and because, you know, there are some scenes in here that are kind of, you know, tugging at your heart, and I'll be first to admit it, you know, prior to having our beautiful daughter, I probably would not have been as, you know, attached to those moments, but, you know, having
yeah.
a baby kind of changes things in the sense, you know?
Sure.
And because of that reason, I am going to give them a 7.5.
Oh, that's not as low as I thought it was going to be.
It would have been a definite 6. Definite 6, possibly pushing lower for me.
So you liked this movie more than The Sword in the Stone?
Way more. But it's,
oh, okay.
It's no, yeah, I guess so, but the...
It's different.
It's that whole thing with me and The Sword of the Stone, the fact that...
Yeah, the title.
Yes,
yeah,
that
yeah,
really
yeah.
ticked me off. How are you going to tell me a movie's about this and only play for 2 minutes?
Old man negative at his finest.
Okay, all right.
You're yes. a sexy old man. Okay, close it.
Yes.
Disney Dad.
Hashtag Disney Dad, name Lou. Da-na-na-na. Not Louis. He tickled me. That's rude. Poor Andre's and the listener's ears.
Listeners, that was a tickle. That was a tickle.
That was a tickle.
Awkward. Okay.
More ratings?
More ratings. Okay. I am going to also give this movie an 8. It's a solid movie. It's a good movie, especially for the time period that it came out in. It really... The whole cohesiveness when it comes full circle is really what brings the score up for me. I wish the music was better, but unfortunately, like I said, this was a time period where they weren't really doing that. So that's why I would score it a little bit lower, but it's like an 8, 8.5 to me. A solid 8 pushing an 8.5. It tugs at my heartstrings. If you haven't seen it, you really should. It's a good movie.
I'm going to give it a very similar score. I'm going to give it an 8. Did you give it an 8?
I said 8, push an 8.5, yeah.
I'm going to give it an 8, too, and for the exact same reason. I think that if the movie took any other turn, I would have been really...
It could have right. gone a different way.
Because
thanks, John Lasseter.
the turn at the end with Goob being bowler hat guy and with that actually being his family,
yeah.
it that is what solidifies... The goodness
like,
of this
wow,
movie.
Wow, that was good.
But
yeah.
if for some reason you like watched it halfway through and stopped, it would be like, that was some crazy
right.
beep, beep, beep.
If you walked out yeah. of this movie because you found it confusing or something like that,
yeah.
you're really missing out.
Yeah, because yeah. the end is what brings it all together. And some people just really don't like those types of twists and turns
right.
Where like if you're confused for 90% of the movie, I could see, because I was too the first time I watched it. But it's got a lot of good family values.
Yeah.
It's got mm-hmm. Some really good laughs. And mm-hmm. I really enjoyed the the character development of Lewis into Cornelius.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with all of that.
Oh, and we didn't even bring her up. The freaking grandma, well, mom, I guess. Lewis, Cornelius's mom.
Oh, the coffee patches?
Is the coffee patch lady.
That's right, yes.
And,
Lucille,
oh,
baking them cookies.
My God. Not
Emily
only was
relates
she,
to that on a level.
Not only was she quote-unquote baking cookies as she was dancing, but in the first time you see her, it's when she's young at the science fair and she's coming to be the Invent Co., like, person.
Yeah.
And she freaking has like 12 coffee patches or 40 coffee patches or whatever, 12
and those
hours each.
Coffee patches each equal 12 cups of coffee.
And she literally hasn't slept in days. It's so funny. I love it.
She should have given one to Goo.
Funny.
That would have solved everything.
Wow.
Oh, problem solved right there.
That's
mine's
a good cup of Joe.
Blown. Next week, we are watching a movie that I'm excited for. I already read it on your list, and you don't remember what it is.
So you're going to have to announce it.
What? Oh. I'm going to announce it.
Go ahead.
I'm excited. I think I'm the only one who is.
We'll know
Cusco. We're watching The Emperor's New Groove.
Yes! I'm very excited. Okay.
Emily's not.
Woo!
I don't think Luis is
Ow!
Either.
Ow.
Eh.
You might change your mind.
Cusco. I've only seen this movie once.
I grew up on this movie.
Dude. Once.
I watched this movie a ton.
You threw off my groove.
Once.
Andre and I are going to have so much fun with this movie. Yes, we're watching The Emperor's New Groove.
Eh, all I have to say, David Spade. Boo.
David Spade. Doing a good job as a cartoon character. All right. Check us out next week, you guys. And you should also check us out on social media. We are at The Walt Vault Pod on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Instagram is where all the action happens. Send us DMs on all those platforms, or you can send us an email to contact@thewaltvaultpod.com, and we may read your message on the show. Won't that be fun? You can also subscribe to our podcast on YouTube, Stitcher, Google Play, and iTunes. Go there, get it delivered directly to you. You can set up notifications so you never miss a Walt Vault episode.
And we're assuming that we met some of you in the park this weekend. We are recording this early because we are going to the park, yeah. So we won't be able to, you know, throw you a bone yet. But if you listen to A Crack in the Vault, you might get some excerpts of what fun we had this weekend and what fun is in store.
That's right. To get access to A Crack in the Vault, go to patreon.com/thewaltvault. And for as little as a dollar or more a month, you can get access to our super fun after show where we will have some Disneyland excerpts next week or this week.
A week.
I
suppose it's this
guys,
week.
Time travel, right? Oh, my goodness. So do that. And if you submit at the $5 or more level, we'll send you a fun little gift. It's fun. You guys subscribe. Leave a review. That's very helpful for all of us. If you leave us a review on iTunes or a rating, that's great, too. Guys, that's it for this week. I can't talk anymore. The Vault is